Hello, this is Peace Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network. You can also find me on the theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. So today I'm at Liberty Fest in Brooklyn. I'm here with the illustrious Jeffrey Tucker. He's a founder of Liberty.me, and he runs FEE.org. And I also, I interviewed Lawrence Reed earlier, the president of FEE.org, so I'm delighted.
I've been friends with Larry since I was an undergraduate. He came to my college and spoke.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was so amazing because then 2 years later, he and I traveled to Nicaragua together.
Wow.
Back when it was run by the communists.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the actual, like, real communists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we got arrested together.
Yeah, he was telling me a little bit about it. He said he was detained, as to call it.
Yeah.
And then he was later.
So it's an offense. It's a pleasure to be working with him now at FEE.
Yeah. He's been doing a lot of great work for many years. I'm really a fan of his work.
And yeah.
He's very graciously sent me some of his books and articles, like his pamphlets, like in the mail. Like, I told him I haven't read any of his books. He said, "What's your address?"
he's a really gracious
man. So tell me a little bit about Liberty.me and what it's about.
I wanted a publishing platform where people could publish and get noticed without having to go through editors, basically. I mean, I wanted libertarians and people who were thinking about the fact of human liberty to be able to have a beautiful place to publish. That was it. And now that's happened. And so every day there's, probably another 15 or 20 articles that appear on the channel and that we push them out on our social network, and a lot of young writers have been able to make a name for themselves as well. It's also a social network, a library, it's many, many things.
Yeah.
So that's $5 a month, it's just awesome.
Yeah.
And it's a great alternative to kind of free social media that's out there.
Yeah, when I started the Voluntary Virtues Network, I think Michael Shanklin set up a thing for Voluntary Virtues Network, and I was publishing some of my articles there,
yeah.
But I kind of stopped, fall by the wayside, I got sidetracked, but also FEE, it's been around for decades, right?
Yeah, well, it was founded in 1946, and it really built the freedom movement in America after World War II. And then, after the founder died in, I think, the early 80s or something like that, it began to drift a little bit, and it's just kind of not a lot has been happening. But I came on in the last year, and with a board that really has big ambitions for the site, to make it into really a freedom's competitor with something like Solana Slate. And where our traffic is now triple what it was even 12 months ago. So we've got this beautiful heritage, huge amount of legacy content, 30,000 records, I think, at this point. And it's just going to get better.
Yeah.
We're building every single day, and over the next 12 months, you're going to see amazing things happen there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So among other things, you're an anarchist, and you're also a big Bitcoin advocate.
Yes.
So can you just describe a little bit about Bitcoin? I mean, you just talked about it in the panel.
No, I mean, I love Bitcoin because it's sort of, it wasn't introduced by a Senate Banking Committee or a Fed economist or an academic at Harvard or something like that. It really grew out of the cypherpunk movement.
Yeah.
Just code geeks who are, today the most valuable assets in the world, as far as I'm concerned, far more valuable than all the governments.
Right.
And it was tested, over the course of 10 months against, every kind of used to try to figure out a way to commodify and title information bundles and port them peer-to-peer around the world without any third-party intervention, and it worked, and Bitcoin achieved its first value on October 5th of 2009, which is, first price. And that was awesome because that was a proof of concept. It was about 16th of a penny.
Was that when they bought the two pizzas?
No, that came much later.
Oh, that was that 2010? November, I think?
Yeah. The first posting of a price of Bitcoin was October 5th, 2009.
Oh,
right. So that was awesome. That showed that you could hack the digital world to make it act like the physical world.
Right.
Which is really all we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It is a kind of gold for the digital age.
Yeah, yeah. And it was funny when I talk to people about Bitcoin. Most of them say, "Yeah, I saw it on Yahoo News, and you know, I heard there was a bunch of crashes and people lost their money. I gotta really trust it." So it's kind of funny that the stuff that they hear is only the stuff from mainstream news, which is all failures and all the, you know.
But it was these people got hacked, you know? new technology. You know, it was this way with railroads. You know, for 40 years, the headlines in the course of building the railroads was, "Oh, look, here's a stock market scam. You know, here's somebody who died. You know." building roads, who's a train that went off a cliff, and so on and so on. And the headline is never that humanity has been transformed because of the railroads. And now millions of people are fed in ways they've never been able to fed. The travel times have been reduced to 100 of what they once were, and so on. It's the same thing with Bitcoin. Yeah, the headlines will always be, you know, filled with the scandals and the rackets and that. And there are plenty of them. But the big picture is that Bitcoin has changed how we think about money.
Yeah, so what do you say to people that say, well, you know, it's just digital, it doesn't exist, and, you know, hackers can just go in there and, you know, steal your money easily, you know? What do you say to those people?
What I used to say is that's not true. I mean, it's the least hackable form of money on the planet, actually, as compared with credit cards. Oh, my God. We are trusting, every one of us trusts probably dozens or even hundreds of third-party providers to hold intimate data of our lives. I mean, if iTunes ever gets hacked, and it happens every day, actually. There's hacking going on all over the place. Steal our identities, steal our money. It's very insecure. Bitcoin is the opposite, because it's an open source protocol. And you enter and exit from the blockchain using a public address system. So it's just awesomely secure. And I've seen it tested and tested again. And I think it's incredible. I mean, in the Bitcoin community, you're very incentivized to find flaws. If you ever find a problem, then you're suddenly famous. You know, so it's being watched by hundreds of thousands of the world's smartest people at all times.
Yeah, yeah, and I also tell
and
people
it also that doesn't hold any personal identity information. That's really incredible.
Although they do say, although I have heard that it's kind of semi-anonymous, because if they can follow your activity, if they go all the way back, they can...
Use the same public address, sure, you can change your public address. Like, I have one public address that I keep on my Facebook page or, you know, whatever, on my website, for donations. And yeah, everybody knows that's me. But even that, they don't know. Like right now with your credit card information, they know everything about you. You know, social security number, all, you know, medical records and, you know, official records of, you know, marriages and houses you've owned and everything. Your whole identity is trusted to the credit card companies. That's not even true, even with the public address on Bitcoin. Because, I mean, anybody without a name or identity or anything can download a wallet and I can send the Bitcoin to become an owner and spend it immediately. The other thing is that so the reward you're looking for is pseudonymous. So it's it's like it's not anonymous, but there's no identity attached to the public address. Then every time you make a transaction, you can use a different public address. So I mean, it's, I guess, theoretically possible that it's traceable in that way, but it's so much less traceable than any other form of money.
Right. Yeah, and the other thing I like to tell people is that people have voluntarily chosen to use Bitcoin, not because they're forced to use it by some, you know, legal tender and government mandate. And so that alone should tell you, like, people love it. They're flocking to it, right? Because they see that it has value and it has use in their lives. And they can transport, you know, value over huge distances, right, across borders.
Instantly at virtually zero cost. That's pretty incredible. I mean, 10 years ago, nobody would have even believed there could be such a thing as Bitcoin. Now it exists, and history will never be the same.
Yeah. Like you said, Bitcoin is some money, like email is to the post office. And, you know, I tell people who say, you know, Bitcoin doesn't exist, it's not real, it's not tangible. I'm like, well, email doesn't exist, it's not real. Does that mean it's worthless?
YouTube is intangible.
Right.
Netflix is intangible.
Right.
Everything valuable is intangible.
Right. It's kind of interesting that, and then the other thing is the intrinsic value. Like, I think Peter Schiff used to use that argument, it doesn't have intrinsic value. But, I mean, people value it for the ease of transfer of value. You know?
And the thing is that it's scarce. It's a scarce good, and that's the brilliance of the blockchain. That it hacked the digital world, it created scarcity out of a non-scarce realm. little units that are very strictly regulated according to an algorithm.
Right.
We get 25 new Bitcoins every 10 minutes or something like that. We know exactly where they are, where they're going, who owns them, what public addresses they're attached to, and so on. So it's money has a number of different properties.
Right.
It has to be divisible, and it has to be portable, and you want it to be durable, and so on.
Yeah,
but one of them is that you have to have scarcity in money.
Right.
That's why the leaves on the trees don't work as money. And so Bitcoin has that scarcity, and that's what's real innovation.
I remember one of Mike Maloney's the Hidden Secrets of Money documentaries, and they say, you know, they say that money grows on trees, when actually in the banking system we have today it grows much faster than trees.
That's really true.
Way faster.
The dollar could never become money today if you were starting from scratch. Like, oh, here's a group of 12 guys who are going to decide how many pieces of paper we're going to print up. And you'll take them and give them value. It's like, no, that's probably never going to happen. It only has value because of the legacy. And the legacy is gold and silver.
Right. It started as a commodity, right?
That's right.
And it was a very slow, gradual evolution of, you know, slowly detaching from the commodity, just accepting the paper.
Right.
And so, right, okay, cool. Beautiful. Jeffrey, thanks a lot.
Okay. It's been a fun conference. Thanks for having
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's awesome. Great to see you. So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.